The Vital Statistics of Mental Health with psychologist David Abramson is brought to you by the High FM Helpline. Caring, compassionate, confidential. 0800 24 24 36.
David Abramson, a very good morning. How are you?
Absolutely fantastic to hear you back on the radio. Kathy did a great job, but we absolutely missed you.
She's so sensitive as a psychologist. Kathy did a great job. What do you think of the music? What do you think of Kathy's music? You can tell us. We won't tell her. It wasn't great, eh?
You won't.
Her music wasn't great. That's just what I'm thinking, but I don't know. What do you think, David?
I think Kathy tried her best.
Thank you.
Condescending. Was that not the most condescending thing you've ever heard from a psychologist? I never want to be told that I've tried my best. That is just the worst thing ever.
I think even Kathy was saying that that she's just filling in. She's just filling in, and we're waiting for your return. And I think so many people have been waiting for your return, Howard. So yeah, it's just so great to switch on the radio and hear your voice again. And we're going to be extra nice to you.
I hope that you're not. But all right, so David, so here's a scenario. Last week, as you know, as our listeners know, my father was very ill for a while, and the last couple of weeks were particularly torturous. We knew the end was coming, but it was just very, very painful as we watched him suffer. And I went to shul for one of the first times. It was on the Jewish festival, and there's a prayer that we have to say called Yizkor, which I went to in memory of my mom. And I get to shul, and a guy comes up to me, a very well-meaning, very nice guy, and he said to me, "How's your dad doing?" And I said, "Look, unfortunately not very well. I just left the house to come to shul in order to say the prayer and then go back home." So I said, "He's really not doing great." So he said, "Maybe there'll be a miracle." So I said, "No, look, it is unlikely that there'll be a miracle, but thank you for your very kind thoughts." And he said, "How old is your father?" And I said, "He is 84. And he said, "Well, at least he's not in his 50s. I said, "I guess, but why do you say that?" He said, "Because then it would be a real tragedy."
Which is
absolutely true. I can't argue. It really would have been a tragedy if he was in his 50s, also considering that I might have been older than him. But that's something completely different. And I thought to myself, wow, why is it that with the best of intentions, and this there's no doubt, this came from a good place. He was trying to find a way to comfort me. But with the best of intentions, we say, and we all do it, we say silly things to people that are going through grief. What is it about us?
Well, I think there's two things. I think the one is, as human beings, I think even as we parent, you know, it's, and as we live, it's not comfortable for us to see people we care about or people around us in pain. And, I think the immediate response is to try and make that person feel better. And with that in mind, and the same thing with parenting. We want to make things better. We want to just fix them immediately. And obviously sometimes, you know, if we're talking about parenting, that's appropriate. If a child is in absolute, you know, fallen down in trauma or whatever it might be, you've got to help them immediately. But we know from parenting that sometimes it's not good to step forward too soon and resolve the pain and try and fix the pain. And similarly, when it comes to people who are in mourning, I think people get flustered. People want to make it better. People want to or feel somehow that they've got to say something that's just going to make this person feel that the loss isn't as bad as it may be. And as you say, instead of really just kind of being there and listening and supporting and asking, "What do you need? You know, or how are you feeling?" They try and in a flustered state, try and make it better somehow. And things, even though, you know, it's true. Yeah. I mean, you know, when people who are older pass away, it's still your father. You know, it's still someone who is, is so close to you, and the loss will be devastating. But that's the inclination, is to try and make it better. And I think that's the most important thing to keep in mind when we're around people who are in pain, who are, you know, is to ask them what they need. And I think very importantly, to listen, just to listen to them. How are you doing? Let them talk. And then ask them what they need, and rather, And I suppose know that that is very powerful. I think there's often this perception that if we don't say something that is going to be, you know, bring a sense of relief, that we aren't helping that person. We're not being empathic. But actually, it's the opposite. I think by actually just listening and being there, and we've seen this, is so powerful.
It's actually so interesting. But adding to that, you know, when you sit a shiva, and as I explained to our listeners, what that means is that you, the family gets together and stays in one environment, you know, and people come and visit them, they look after them, etc. When you sit shiva, it's almost like a little bit of a roller coaster, especially for a death like this, which was expected. It is sad, but absolutely part of the cycle of life. And what happens during the shiva is you spend a lot of time reminiscing, and that reminiscing means laughter as well, because in many ways it's a celebration of that life and the quirks and the eccentricities and the stories. And what I found as well was sometimes we would be sitting and doing exactly this, going through that, but somebody would walk in with obviously a very, you know, nervous, sad look on their face. And we would have to almost match their sadness rather than being able for them being, and I guess it is hard to be able to walk into an environment and read it and say, you know what? They are having, they're reminiscing. They're actually in good spirits. I don't have to bring this down to a level of sadness again.
Yes, yes. And I think for me, that's the point. That's the point. The point is that, you know, we kind of have this caricature almost of what mourning needs to look like. Mm. And I think that is part of it, that actually when you are overwhelmed by grief and you are in the throes of this trauma, it's actually at times quite a relief to talk about something else. It's not possible really. And us human beings are very clever, in the way that we were made, I think physically and I think emotionally as well, where we actually are inclined not to stay in that space of being absolutely overwhelmed by grief and talk about other things that you do want to talk about. It might be things that are happening around you. It might be exactly as you say, reminiscing about the fantastic times, about a funny incident that happened. And that's completely natural. And I think if you had to explain to someone who comes in and says, you know what, it's been very hard, but we're just remembering some of the great times, I think that normalizes that. And I think that would be completely seen as acceptable because I think that's what we all do. We do at some stage, maybe sooner rather than later, it's all very personal, reflect on the past. And and I think that's important to use to cope.
Yeah, Kim says, it used to make me so angry when people would say they had such a good innings. It's actually interesting because a few people did say that, and truthfully it didn't bother me at all. Because he did. I feel like, yes, 84 today isn't particularly old, but there were circumstances. Right. My mom passed away 3 years ago. We saw that he lost his fight and his zest for life after that. So perhaps we had come to expect that this was going to happen. So interestingly enough, it didn't bother me when people made those sort of comments.
Well, it all depends where you're at, you know, and kind of the perspective that you're coming from. And, you know, if someone was younger to people and if they were sick and someone says, at least they're not suffering, you know, I hear that quite a lot. You know, maybe that would be seen and taken as a positive by some people who are close to that person because they aren't suffering. That's true. But the point is that they're not here anymore. And even if, you know, people say that, yes, they're not suffering, but why were they ill at all? Why did they even get ill? You know, it's not fair. And so again, you know, it's so interesting how, you know, we all kind of hear about, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's, kind of five stages. And it's interesting that she wrote this book. It actually comes from a book called Death and Dying. She wrote this book in 1969 and not much has changed. You know, we still kind of look at this as the yardstick.
Actually, you raise a very good point because I did find myself going through anger, but it was more about like the food I wasn't eating. Is that inappropriate, David?
How would for you not? No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Wow. I'm not even sure how to take
No,
that.
No. But I think you're making such a good point, such a good point, because
like I was irrational about one of our lunches, really, properly irrational. And everyone was laughing at me, but I was genuinely angry about it, for reasons now that I think back, I actually can't even understand. But at the time I really was. So is that all part of that?
Coping with loss is it's ultimately a very deep personal and singular experience, Howard. It is so personal. And even, and I think there is often misunderstanding even around these five stages of loss. It doesn't mean that you have to feel all of them. It doesn't mean that you have to feel them in a certain order. And for a certain length of time. Loss is so personal and grief is so personal. So it's not inappropriate. It's not inappropriate at all. So everyone needs to do what they need to do to go through this trauma.
Mm-hmm. Rene says, my job is to take care of old people in Israel. One of the people I took care of was an 89-year-old lady. I asked her how she feels about getting old, and she answered to me, well, at least I won't die young. which is, I love that sort of thing. And this is another thing about the Jewish way, is to allow the mourners to lead the conversation. If they don't talk in, the visitors just sit in peaceful silence. But I do notice that people battle with that.
Generally, I know that we see this in therapy. We see this generally in social situations. If there's silence, that's a bad thing. You know, it's an uncomfortable thing, to sit with silence. And it's a whole different discussion. But I think it's very profound. That silent, which is, something which is so valuable, because then we can listen and then we can think, and there's so much, when it comes to silence, there's so many positive things, but how we feel like we need to actually push it away. So I think for me, that's very profound.
David Abramson, it is unfortunately 9:00. We do need to leave it there. This is where I love and leave you as well. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m.